What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're doing our Listener Spotlight. This is the day three of the Listener Spotlight Series Marathon. I think we've had 10 so far, and it's been great. Conversation in between. Kat has been logged in quite a bit, carrying on a lot of conversations with Mary from Alaska, with Daniel, who's just across town from her, with me. And it's really been a lot of fun, the in-between times, hanging out just as well as hearing everybody's story. So this is specifically about you, Kat, as a listener of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I thank you for logging in and being an active participant and an advocate and sharing it with people and liking it on Facebook, retweeting and all that other stuff. So thank you very much. So
my
friend, Kat Marr, how many years have you been in the profession of athletic training?
24. This is my 24th year.
24 years. All right. So tell me, where did you first hear about athletic training, and then how did you get to where you are right now?
Well, I learned about it in college. We didn't have athletic trainers in high school. I grew up overseas. I was playing soccer, got hurt, training room. Kind of the rest is history. I changed my major from international relations to, at that time, we didn't have a degree in athletic training in 87. So I did a education degree with physical education and health, and I concentrated on athletic training. So there were a lot of overlapping courses, the anatomy and kinesiology, exercise, phys, all of that kind of interlap. So I kind of did a two-for-one-er. And that's me. Undergrad, George Mason University.
All right. And just real quick, why are you said undergrad, international business or international relations?
Yes, international relations. I grew up, born, raised overseas, military dependent. Came over here my junior year of high school and kind of did not like the educational system. Kind of a big pond, so to speak. And over there, we had like 500 in the whole school. And my graduating class at Robinson Secondary was like 1,200. So it was a little shell shock for me. So I skipped my senior year and went to George Mason on early admissions. And all I had to do was take Virginia government. So they took government 103 as a credit. So I just went to college. And since I liked overseas, I thought maybe embassy work, borders, you know, just to go back to Europe and hang out because I had a really great life over there. And so international relations. I speak Greek, so I was concentrating on Russian studies at the time. And taken some Chinese, which I did not do well in. Russian was a little bit better. But then I switched to PE. So my older brother just made fun of me a lot for going to PE. So he would be like, shuffleboard on the Lido deck, because I was taking the courses, basketball and track and field and gymnastics and baseball class. And so when he saw my transcripts, he was like, I cannot believe, you know, you're going to school for this. But I had to learn how to teach it. It wasn't just activity class. I wasn't just playing all the time.
Right, right.
I tried to explain it to him, but it's difficult. He's really smart. Both my brothers are. One's an electrical engineer. My older brother is an electrical engineer. So he designs wafers, and he has a whole bunch of patents. And my younger brother is finance and business. So he does like all the accounting for Dell. So, and then here I am, PE major. So, and they still don't really get what I do. Even my parents, you know, they're like, why can't you come home for Christmas? I have games. I have, you know, it's been 24 years since I've left college and have been doing this professionally, and they still kind of don't get it, but it's all right.
Yeah. So you were in high school in the United States for just 1 year, and then you skipped your senior year and went straight to college?
Yep.
Huh. Very interesting.
It sounds a lot smarter than it is. I'm really not the sharpest tool in the shed. It was just, you know, I was in a great place, and educationally, the Department of Defense schools were a little bit more advanced than the American schools. And I was able to do it. So that was a good deal, because I had done first grade twice. So in retrospect, I was like, well, I was just catching up on my schooling. And I ended up doing 5 years in college, so it kind of all came out in the wash.
All right, so you graduated from George Mason University, and what's next?
I moved from Washington, D.C., Virginia, all the way cross country to El Paso, Texas, 1992. That was my first job, and I enjoyed it. It was okay. Athletic training at the high school, and then I also taught elementary PE for the morning at Rosa Guerrero Elementary School. We just had just opened up that that school, and then I would eat lunch in my car and kind of go two blocks to Coronado High School. It was a great learning experience, being in Texas, being so far away from my family, my friends, and then, of course, being plopped into athletic training. But, of course, I love it because I met my husband. So it was a good move for both me and him.
Got you. So you met Brian in El Paso?
Yep. He had driven by himself in his car from Pennsylvania all the way to El Paso. And they had hired three athletic trainers in 1992. Myself, Brian, and a gentleman, Tom Redlinger. And Tom had come down with his dad, and I came down with my mom. And Brian came down with just Brian. So we kind of did everything together in July. We went to in-services, and my mom and Tom's dad found us a place to live. So we were all in the same kind of apartment. I think Tom was on the first floor, Brian was on the second floor, and I was on the third floor, all in the same building. And we all got the same insurance. We all got the same water. We did everything together. So it was really good to have other athletic trainers kind of in the same boat.
Very cool. That's it's interesting that you're both from, well, not from, but you're both in the northeastern United States, came down here to Texas, to El Paso. You just happened to come down here to El Paso, met, and then now you're here in Houston. It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, we met in El Paso, and then Brian's brother, Greg, was just in his last semester at Georgia State in Atlanta doing his graduate work. And I really did feel like I really didn't know athletic training, to tell you the truth. I had graduated, but there was so much that I didn't know. As an internship program, it's you learn by doing or reading. And like I tell my students, you know, it's amazing that first year out of school that I didn't maim somebody. Good head on my shoulders, but academically, not the most academically rigorous program at that time. Brian graduated from a curriculum program, so he really taught me a lot. We were very good friends from the start. I'm very outgoing, and as you know, the listeners may not, my husband is not. We're kind of a good fit, yin and yang, so he compliments me, and I like to think I compliment him. So he's very quiet, reserved, but a very good teacher. And so I learned a lot that first year with him. He was at, I was at Coronado, and he was over the mountain at Andrus. And being from a small town close to Pittsburgh, Connellsville, he was a fish out of water in El Paso. So he didn't quite like it as much as I did, because I was used to traveling. But had the opportunity to go to Atlanta at Georgia State. So we packed up and I went over there, and he was actually going to continue on in El Paso, but got a great job at Harrison High School north of Atlanta as their first athletic trainer. And so we both ended up in Atlanta, and I went to grad school and he worked, and we seemed to make it work. But I loved Atlanta. I had a great assignment for Georgia State. I was at Peach Orthopedic Clinic, and you know, speaking of mentors earlier with Kathy Supak and everybody, they really were my mentors. Bob Batters was head of the clinic, and he was a physical therapist. And then we had Bob and George, athletic trainers, who also graduated from Georgia State, and they really taught me a lot. A lot of it was like my internship at undergrad, all hands-on, but I was working with million-dollar athletes, so I couldn't make any mistakes. And they were very good teachers. I miss Atlanta. I miss the people, but coming to Houston was a good step for our family and a good step for our profession. Texas, coming back to Texas was, I think, a step up because of our licensure and our community here. So we've kind of bounced a little bit all over, and our families are all over, but it works.
Yeah, that's quite the Globetrotter story there. All right. Kat, in your opinion, in all these various experiences, what's the worst thing that you've dealt with? I mean, you just told me earlier you had a 9:15 appointment with a colleague's fracture. So what's the worst thing you've dealt with?
Well, I have had to do the CPR, an AED, and fortunately they did survive. That also, I think, is the worst thing. But I've seen mostly everything, but I do get surprised frequently. We've had the ankle fracture dislocations. We had two non-contact femur fractures. Knock on wood. We haven't had one this year, but one last year and the one year before. Non-contact femur fractures. So that was pretty interesting. And it took a while for them to get back, obviously. But managing that at practice was okay. But the other one was in a game, and having everybody, I'm riding with them after we package them on the golf cart, and I have, parents, yelling at me from the stands. Is he going to be able to play? Is he okay? Is he broken? Of course, when you get the red split bag out, most people know that it's broken. But of course, I can't say that. I'm like, oh, he'll be fine, as we're driving to the ambulance. I've had a couple of weird ones. One of my athletes, about 3 or 4 years ago, avulged all of this, almost like somebody came through his face mask and pulled his lip down, and so that tore everything. So I could have just pulled it all the way down. So that was a little freaky to look in his mouth and to see some blood. It didn't bleed a lot, but to see all of that evolves off.
So he basically tore his lower lip off of the jaw, and it was still attached to the face. So what did they do?
Interestingly enough, I thought that they would, kind of stitch it up. Nope. He just gargled with salt water for about 4 weeks, and we made sure that he had his chin strap really tight, and it healed.
No way. Just by itself. No stitches?
No stitches. Yeah, I had really great pictures. I don't have his face, but took really great pictures. Yeah, I know, it's like freaky. Not really traumatic, but at that time I was like, what? There's a couple of times where I just, really? Like, is that happening? And trying to think, what the heck am I doing with this? So yeah, I sent them, and no, he's fine, no problem. Just make sure the chin strap is secure for practice and play, and just rinse a little bit. And of course, he didn't eat too much. He did a lot of shakes and things, but they said, no, he's fine. Continue at the discretion of the licensed athletic trainer. And my discretion was basically, huh?
Yeah.
My reaction. I know. They don't teach you that, at least they've never taught me things like that. So this year I also had a pneumothorax, which I've not actually had in one of my athletes. So that was one of those, he's spitting up blood, that's not a good thing. When I was talking to his guardian, he's like, well, he seems perfectly fine, just wheezing a little bit. No, when you're actually expelling blood, that's not normal, and those are things that need to be checked out. And so we had a good sideline physician at that time. He just got squashed. And so he was out for about 2 or 3 weeks. And it took about another 3 weeks after that to kind of get him back cardiovascularly, because we started like on 5 minutes on the bike and he would be winded. So it was kind of a difficult road for him. And, you know, again, he just got squashed up in a tackle, got laid on and came over and was sitting and told an athlete to come get me. I was on the sideline and I came and I thought, oh, okay. And I looked at him and I said, you feeling all right? Well, a little bit. And he had some blood, so we rinsed it out. I said, well, just sit there and I'll come back to you. And no sooner had I walked like 3 steps that he yelled at me, Mar, and I turned back and he just would start spitting. And I was like, ooh, this isn't good. So I have student trainers that are in my shadow, and I turned to my shadow and I said, go get Dr. Rand now. And so they went to the other side and got Dr. Rand, and he came over. And because I was like, again, not really a good situation, and everything seemed fine. So that's why the docs are there, to get paid the big bucks.
Yep. Or volunteer their time, either way. All right. Tell me about what you think maybe your most memorable moment as an athletic trainer.
1995, Atlanta Braves World Series. I really like that. I like being involved with that. I really enjoyed the boys. But now as a high school athletic trainer, I just like to see them succeed, academically, personally, athletically, through their rehab, and those that are just on the team that I don't get to see that actually are successful. I really enjoy, I have one former athlete in here right now. They come back. And I think that's the highest compliment, when they come back in college, out of college, you know, preparing to go to play for pay, and they still come back and they see the high school athletic trainer. I really like that, and that's something that I really enjoy, is to see them come back and be successful, whether they're in athletics or not. Just come back and kind of remember, oh, I remember you, and thank you so much. You know, you are a hard ass, but I love you. So that I like.
All right. If you have one piece of advice for athletic trainers, what's that going to be?
Keep learning. Keep learning. Keep swimming. Every day is different. I want to mimic everybody else. You know, take the time for yourself. I don't know how to do that. So that's one of those do as I say, not as I do. I don't know how to say no, really. When it comes to, can you cover this? Can you do that? I'm passionate about increasing athletic training, especially in the secondary school. I'm passionate about the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society getting as many members and making it as successful as possible. And so that sometimes I have several irons in the fire. I want to be of use. I want to be very helpful. I want to be an advocate. So sometimes, you just have to step back and take some time for yourself. I'm still in the process of learning that, but that's really great advice, is to take some family time and learn to say no. I just don't know how to do that yet after 24 years.
That's right. You learned how to do a Google Hangout. You'll learn something.
That's right. I love this Google Hangout thing. You know, I think it's wicked cool. I really do. I really do. So, you know, you can teach an old dog new tricks, but with athletic training, you just got to keep learning. I know some of the symposiums are very dry and repetitive, but going there, you might get one or two new pieces of information, and that could make all the difference. And if you're very satisfied with where you're at, then I don't think you're going to be as successful for yourself and for your student athletes. You really do need to keep learning and keep improving. So, I mean, that's my thing. I just told one of my students that just graduated, educationally now, I would love to go back to school. I don't think that I would make it in the athletic training program now. She was like, no way. And I'm like, yeah, they take a lot of classes that I never took a pharmacology class.
Right.
Or a chemistry class or any of those. You know, I had anatomy, exercise, phys, kinesiology, and of course, introduction to athletic training. evaluations and modalities. That's what I graduated with undergrad. That's it. And I'm an athletic trainer. So I do think that we have come a long way educationally, and I totally support that. I think we absolutely need to continue learning. I'm just not going to get into the old undergrad graduate paradigm. We'll let Josh Yellen do that.
Yeah. All right. All right. So tell me, who are three people you would like to thank and why?
I think I probably wrote it down a lot better. I'm smarter in writing. Well, first and foremost, of course, God. I've been very blessed, kind of fallen into many opportunities that I would never have known to plan for. So I think God looks out for me. And of course, my mom and my dad, strong Greek upbringing, good moral character, I think. And that all comes from my parents and the opportunities that they give me. So I always thank them. And of course, my husband. I always thank my husband. I'm very lucky to have found him. And I mimic you. I should probably put it in my iPhone. I love my husband. And he is the best man that I know besides my father. So those are the three.
All right. And so earlier you said you speak Greek. And when you're here in the notes, you wrote like Othios for God or Philotimo and Aposoi for
mom. Aposoi, yes. Aposoi, that means like from my village. My mom used to always remind me. And I do the same thing with my students. It's not just you. I think most ethnic people, it's you are the representative of your family and your family tree. So Aposoi means a lot to me because I am, you know, the Greek daughter of a Greek daughter of a Greek daughter, and I take that very seriously. I enjoy that identity, and you know, my aunts were strong women. You know, very little means. We come from very humble back in Greece, and I love going back there and seeing all my family and tracing the lineage. And it's where you come from is important, and to know that you represent them, not just yourself. It's your name. So that's what that means. And Thea and Theo, Thea is like the very, very similar to the Spanish tia, uncle and aunt.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that is Katmar. Up next, we have Alexandra. She's logged in. So, Katmar, thanks for everything you do for GHATS, for encouraging the education. I know we're going to try and have a conversation about the high school student athletic trainer National Honor Society, and we'll have that on there so that some of the other programs can try and do that as well. So, congratulations on your chapter. I know you guys are having your induction coming up. And so again, for being an encouragement, being someone to kind of look up to. I know Bill has pulled quite a few things off of your teacher website for the poster, you know, the way that we go about working into that and that kind of thing. So thanks for being there, for being available, and like you said, being useful.
I try. Thank you so much for what you do. I really enjoy the podcast. Whether I'm logged in live or not, I enjoy it. So thank you so much. You taught me a lot.
That's right. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Kat, what's the best way?
My website, my cell phone. My cell phone is 281-831-0330. And I know people are like, oh, no, she put it out there. It's on my website anyways. But like you said, all of my lessons, all of our paperwork, I try to put everything on the website so that, you know, I have friends or internet friends, you know, like North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New York, California, Washington, and they pull off my website all the time. So anything that I have, anybody can use. I don't even need to get credit. Just use it, modify it, do what you will with it. So email me cmar2@clientisd.net, and hopefully I'll see everybody at NATA Baltimore and SWATA in Arlington. I'm not getting to go to SPATS, so you're going to enjoy that. That's such a fun time. I remember going with Angerstein and Salter, so enjoy that, and I look forward to seeing your podcast on it.